I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Only two of the women convicted of HIV criminalization in Canada were accused of actually infecting someone. In both cases, it was women of color. Sua Lee Iamkong, a Thai immigrant, and June Tepiniskum, an Aboriginal woman, were both convicted of having infected their husbands. One was deported and the other was in prison for 3.5 years. The husband's histories with needles or sex with men was not determined. No phylogenetic testing was done to see if their HIV was the same strain, and there was no investigation into whether or not the men were sharing needles with these convicted women or with others. If women could sexually transmit HIV, wouldn't there be an epidemic for heterosexual men and lesbians as well?
Come on.
Statistics are coy on the matter of whether female-to-male transmission is real, for no sources in Canada cite heterosexual men as a significant risk group, even while reporting the numbers of men who say they were infected by women. The silence of service organizations speaks volumes. For despite pro forma warnings that women can infect men, few in the Canadian AIDS business, end quotes, feel compelled by on-the-ground reality to address it. And when was the last time that heterosexual men's real needs were ignored? Never. In the meantime, as we culturally sort out this question, female sex workers are consistently targeted by HIV criminalization as vectors of infection to men who then bring it home to their wives, when actually female sex workers are overwhelmingly the more likely party to get infected. According to the Canadian HIV AIDS Legal Network, there is no epidemiological evidence in Canada to show that transmission of HIV from sex workers to their clients regularly takes place. From the most intimate realm of romance and a desire that to that of public policy, the state victimizes to avoid facing its own internal instabilities and contradictions. Instead of public health menaces, HIV positive women are just people in need of service and care. It's safe to say most if not all of the Canadian men claiming to have been infected by women are not telling the truth. So you have almost one-fourth of HIV positive men in Canada telling a false story about themselves in order to be eligible for compassion, a compassion that is only available if they were infected by women, an illogical conclusion that cannot possibly exist. This extraordinarily stark situation gives us all a chance to learn from the HIV example. How would we understand our responsibilities to our friends, family members, and co-nationals if we could extrapolate that perhaps at least a quarter of the people we know are misrepresenting themselves as abused in order to gain our compassion? Will we ask ourselves why we so readily endorse victimology without gathering more information? Or will we question the very construct of compassion, how we practice it, who we offer it to, and that what we expect back in return? Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen,
and we're live on a Tuesday, ready to do some podcasting. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Just search the Black Guy Who Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. Like, we say that every episode, but we mean it every episode. Somebody go out there and leave us a 5-star review. Mm-hmm. Let it be you. Be that special person.
Let it be you.
Okay, I spent all day today printing out and labels, mailing cards in the rain. Like, I went to FedEx to cut these fucking stickers up for you guys. Like,
oh, that's right, because those are the ones that sent like the block.
Yeah, I'll get to it in a second, but like, yo, come on, man. A 5-star review, I ain't asking for much. If imagine I sent you a Christmas card and you ain't gave me a 5-star review.
Come on now. But you want a Christmas card?
I paid for that stamp and all the Christmas cardy stuff that goes in there, getting it printed and buying the new graphic that goes on there.
We looking at you. You know who you are. Quit standing around looking at other people. We talking to you. You said, hey, I want one of them pretty cards. I love Rod and Karen, but you ain't left no 5-star reviews. The doors of the church are open. And you are all forgiven, and when you come, it is right on time.
Santa Claus ain't real, but my motherfucking cards I'm sending your ass is.
They real.
And I really would appreciate a 5-star review if you haven't, if you would be so inclined, please. All
and
right.
And they say shame don't work.
Yeah, I'm shaming you, Nicholas. You should have listened to my shame in 2016. We have Hillary Clinton. Now your ass got to settle for Joe Biden. I was right. Anyway, let's get to the show, but I was reading an excerpt from, of course, from Conflict Is Not Abuse, which, like I said, amazing book. It went, Sarah Schulman is amazing, and she went further and in different places than I thought the book was going. And when she gets to, because she basically builds on it, like in chapters one, and you know, like early chapters, it's more about stuff like individual conflict and how people don't handle it, and so then they jump to, I'm the victim here, because they know in certain communities you can quote unquote win by claiming victimhood,
right?
And of course, you know, we also reward people that have like severe like mental illness and stuff, narcissism, stuff like this. We actually reward them by giving them this easy path to like total domination of people.
Of course.
Oh, you're the victim? Well, we'll be mean to this other person because you said, oh no, you don't have to prove yourself, because if I ask you to prove yourself, I'm actually insulting you, and that's, that would be wrong, you know. And whatever you decide I need to do to this person, I can do, because they're the bad guy, you're the good guy, right? Well, that's the early stuff. About the end, she builds towards bigger things like state sanction incarceration of people, you know, the idea of Canada, which we all consider like the woke country compared to America, and how they criminalize HIV to the point where they lock people up, and because they can only consider the solution to be victim versus abuser, and one of you has to go to jail. Now, when you make something with the full power of the government behind you,
right,
the full power of policing, all this stuff behind you, and the threat of it, and then the condemnation socially of you as an HIV positive person, you have now made a rush to get to the government like punishment system first. So whoever gets there first wins, essentially. I love that she highlighted a couple of cases there where it was men who probably had attained HIV from somewhere outside of their relationship with their wife.
Right.
And then came home and, I'm HIV positive, you're HIV positive, you gave it to me. They're not gonna test to see what, if I even had the same strain. There's no proof of who gave it to who, even though we know for a fact it is almost, it's an infinitesimal how many times a cishet man can get HIV from a woman. Like, especially if you're circumcised. So it's very few, I think it's circumcised, maybe it's uncircumcised, but either way, it's a very low risk for it to transfer that way. We know because she breaks it down. She's like, if it were, why are the resources that the government is talking about HIV prevention, why is it not focusing on cishet women who give it to men?
Right.
Because she brings it up in that passage. When has the government ever not addressed cishet male
issues
first? Like, first and foremost. So you telling me that this is a huge problem? 25% of men who are HIV positive in Canada are saying, I got it from a straight woman in a straight relationship. Now, we know all the pressures of society to be like, I mean, I'm straight, you know, I'm in the closet or whatever. I'm on the down low, as they call it here. Like, we know all those pressures, and we know what comes with it when people find out you're gay, when people find out. And so there may be some men who are inclined to be like, no, I got it from straight sex. Okay, well, that's so unlikely. The government programs to prevent it don't invest any money in preventing that way. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't, even lesbian women, they're not even,
yeah, because it would be skyrocketed, yeah,
right? They're not even trying to prevent it amongst lesbian relationships. So you're telling me this, not to mention, if you get it from, you know, like they said, they'll lock up a woman who's a prostitute who's much more likely to have received HIV from a client,
right,
than to have infected some man with HIV.
Right.
We lock up the women, you know, it happened to be women of color. The other people that have been locked up on this law in Canada, a lot of men of color. So when, you know, when we talk about the stigmatizing of HIV as a diagnosis, as you have to explain it to people before you have sex and stuff, we don't actually know what is true and what's not. And yet we, because the way our law system is built, we move upon it as if we have direct knowledge. You know, the intimacy of a sexual encounter is, and not, okay, so there's two parts of this. One, the intimacy of a sexual encounter that we don't have on record,
right?
we don't actually know who's telling the truth.
Mm-mm.
So you're going, well, you should have to disclose. Okay, cool. What if I did disclose to you, but then later, you know, we had a fight, you don't like me anymore, and you go to the government and say he didn't tell me? What then? The government goes, well, you told me first, so the other guy must have gave it to you, so he has to go to jail.
Right.
This is the stuff I was talking about on Sunday that I said I couldn't get into because I didn't have the whole chapter in front of me.
Right.
But it was stuff I hadn't thought about. I had never known about it.
Right. So you mean to tell me, like, you basically, and this is fucking ridiculous, everybody that I have sex with, if I find out I'm HIV positive, everybody has to sign paperwork and documentation and sign the date and then stamp and put it in blood? Word.
Right. Then, in addition to that, the other part of it is, if you are HIV positive and you are having sex with someone and you're using a condom or, mm-hmm. you know, on whatever meds or whatever, well, then there's, to me, I can understand why that person doesn't have to disclose. You don't have to disclose if you have herpes. You don't have to disclose if you have, right. Syphilis. You don't have to disclose if you, yes. if you use the proper, things to prevent transmission. Essentially, we treat those differently. Like, you can do those and that's fine and no big deal, right? There's no crime there. Even if you did transmit it, it wouldn't be a crime. But let's just, in this case, you took the proper channels. So a lot of people are saying, the disclosure is not something that happens in a vacuum. Mm-mm. So let's say I do, you know, I know the stigma that has, you know, HIV positivity has attached to it. Now I have to disclose it to any and everybody that I may, you know, even have a casual sexual intercourse with. Well, what if I don't want everybody to know my shit?
Right.
You know, and so there's a fear there because of the stigma. I'm not saying it's necessarily correct. I'm not trying to make it where it's like opposite world and it's like, but the point is, it's deeper than just, just tell people.
Right. You put people's lives at risk. Right.
Not to mention, like I said, you can disclose, I know this thing now, I can go to the law. Cause guess what? You're actually a criminal by being HIV positive already. You don't,
right.
Even though you haven't done anything, all I have to do is be like, we had sex. He didn't tell me that. I found out later. Oh, well, we gotta go lock his ass up. Now, did y'all have sex? Oh, you know, well, yeah, we did have sex. Well, you didn't tell him? No, I told him. Well, he says you didn't. You gotta go to jail. You know, like, my word against yours, and your word counts is for shit because you are HIV positive. You know, these are the things that the book made me think about. It also goes into a lot of stuff about Palestine and Israel that I didn't know. That was deep as fuck too. So it's just a good book, man. I think once you get out to the idea of what victimhood is and what abuse is and the idea of the social stigma of around each one, and how you can kind of reverse the power on certain shit, there are people that are the bad guy that claim victimhood that then get to consistently dominate other people when it's really a conflict, when there's mutual aggression on both sides, but might not be mutual power on both sides. So it's every man who, after Ray Rice hit his wife, said, okay, but what if a woman's coming at you with a knife? You see, like, it's that where it's like, yeah, but see, if I'm kind of the victim here, then I think I can justify what Ray Rice did, even though they're not the same.
They are not the same, and it's very, as a woman, it's fucking frustrating. 1.1%, most people that will never, ever, ever, never, 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 never happen to. So I'm like, okay, you're using this, not that it hasn't happened,
mm-hmm.
but it's really low. Most of the time, in this particular situation, guess what? She ain't had a fucking knife, so what the fuck are we talking about? He just popped her upside the fucking right. head. But, they're not the goddamn same.
Right, but if I can run to being the victim first, I can reverse reality. So essentially, we know men are stronger than women in right. most cases. We know men are more violent than women. We know almost every single statistic about gendered violence shows men doing it to women. You know, like being the perpetrators of violence in most cases, right? We know these things. But if I can jump to that 1% of time, or that, you know, that small percentage of time where the woman is the aggressor, I can then reframe the entire conversation into another point about, like, well, if a woman got a gun, I just gotta let her kill me? You know, I can jump to that. And I think that's when we don't think about how big that can get. Like in that one scenario, we're talking about two individual people. But, you know, how many times do white people run to victimhood to then do racism to people? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was afraid for my life.
They cops, can understand that.
Cops, they were afraid for their lives. They run to the victim part first. They can shoot an unarmed, innocent person minding their business. They can run to being a victim first by, I was scared. Well, if you're scared, that's associated with victimhood. You're the victim and you just protected yourself. Now, why should you go to jail? I mean, sure, you know, you didn't mean to kill the person, obviously, or you didn't realize what you were doing, but you were so scared. You know, like, that's the thing. And when she brought up Israel and Palestine, she brought up how, you know, and she's Jewish, so she brought up how, like, Israel overstates fear and the harm that Palestine can do to it in order to be like, oh yeah, we can go and fucking, like, commit genocide on these people if we want to, because we're scared. And if we're scared, then we can do whatever the fuck we want. And our allies and stuff need to understand that if they don't, then they're anti-Semitic, because we're the real victims here. Right. You know, it's like, the shit is deep, man. Like I said, it's a fucking great book. It gave me a lot to think about, just things I hadn't considered, because I'd always just been like, a, you know, HIV is not a thing that I've ever had to deal with in that way. So to me, I just, you know, the simple out, you know, ignorant observation was, well, yeah, you just disclose it or don't have sex, period. That's your life. But I don't have to deal with the fallout of, you know, okay, I disclosed it and then later someone lies on me. You know, I don't have to deal, you know, I don't have to deal with the fallout of, well, if I use protection and the person, you know, doesn't get infected, why am I still obligated to disclose this very deep fucking thing about myself?
And my thing is, I just think about what you said, it's like, that's ridiculous. Just because I had AIDS don't mean I'm,
well, HIV in this,
I mean,
case,
HIV, yeah, don't mean I'm just gonna just not fuck again, you know, and that's, yeah.
Or even if, like, or just the idea that if you do, you will have to disclose to people that you have it. And right. I, you know, I'm like, I don't really think that that's something you can put into a law. The same way we can't with herpes,
trying to control human behavior,
you know, like, I'm not saying that it's not foul, I'm not even saying there's not some people that break the law, there are, right, gonna, or that do immoral shit with it. I'm not saying, correct, that's not my argument, mm-hmm, but simply that, can we turn it into a criminal justice issue? I'm not sure it translates one-to-one, because in Canada, where we actually have the stats and the history of criminalizing HIV, we've seen that it's not working. The only people going to jail are brown people, number one, and then number two, women going to jail who clearly did not infect these people, like the like it would have been a miracle for them to get it. 25% of men claiming that it was women who gave it to them. Like, this is societal pressure to make you say that, you know, because of, well, I can't say I got it through drug use, I can't say I got it because I can't be gay, so my wife gave it to me, you know, like, this shit is fucked up. So it just really made me think about a lot of stuff, which is why I like reading. But yeah, I saw we already got a letter about me talking about it on Sunday or whatever, so I'm sure I'll be addressing it on the feedback show. It's a pretty long letter, but yeah, man, like, I don't say the shit haphazardly. I've thought about it a lot. I'm not, you know, I think especially now that we have drugs that can literally lower people's like to the point where it's not even traceable,
right,
and someone, like, I kind of feel like criminalizing it is now more about the social stigma and making us feel better that we, right, punish somebody than it is about the actual impact of what it would do in life, the, you know. And then of course with in Canada, if you, the other part that's in that chapter I didn't talk about, maybe I will another time, if you go to the doctor for something else and they do a blood test, they find out you're HIV positive, you're registered as HIV positive. Like, you then have to be on these medications and stuff of this nature. Like, it's like, this shit is not a game. So you don't have a choice at that point. And if you don't participate in that shit, you're a criminal. Like,
right, that's why you probably have a lot of people that's like, I'm, no, you will never test me for that bullshit, I don't care if I have it or not,
what
fuck
is,
it,
yeah, what it's done is it's made people scared to get tested, right, for anything, which anything, is, which is the opposite of what you would assume the point of the program would be. That's the opposite, you know, but I don't know. People are complicated, man.
Yeah, because the way that they enforce the law, like, you, right. The law, because when,
like, I'm sorry, the only defense they have is ignorance. So it's better to not know your status, because then they can't throw you in jail.
Right.
That's because we put the weight of the law on a problem that is not necessarily a legal problem that should be solved with punitive actions, that should be solved with incarceration and criminal justice. Because we are attacking it from that angle of criminal justice, you're going to make people avoid responsibility more than you're going to make them lean into responsibility. They're going, oh no, don't test me for shit, because if someone later comes out and says I infected them, and I go, and you can point to this day and go, well, you knew in January 2016, your ass is going to jail, so don't test me. I'd rather not know. And that's the exact opposite of what you want to have happen with a law like that.
Right, and that's what happens when you get the government. There are some things that, yes, the government does need to step in, and the government does need to be concerned about public health and all these things too. But before you make, like, these sweeping laws, you actually need to do studies and statistics, and pay these people who got these degrees and shit, and pay the people that, like, are higher up in the National Health Department, whatever they have over there, to find out facts and figures and, like, real root things, and then off of those things determine these factors, and don't be punitive like this. There are some people you go, yeah, you need to go to jail, don't get me wrong, right. But in most instances, do they need to go to jail, or are there other ways these things could be handled? Because a lot of times you get the government involved, they're about punishment, they're about locking people up, and most people who are going to be locked up are going to be brown people.
Yeah, so it's just like I said, man, I enjoy reading that just because I had literally never heard anyone talk about that before. So yeah, that's today's Reading Rainbow.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere, things to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow, a reading rainbow.
All right, let's get into the show, guys. Jay-Z and Kanye reportedly reconciled months before Diddy's LA birthday celebration. Fans were up in arms after photos surfaced of Jay-Z and former close friend and collaborator Kanye West dapping up at P. Diddy's 50th birthday party. According to reports, the two have been on better terms recently, a welcoming consummation to their long-standing quarrel. On Saturday night, celebrities gathered at P. Diddy's Los Angeles home for the songwriter's star-studded 50th birthday celebration.
That's why them pictures was coming from his birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As the many, Snoop Dogg was dressed like somebody's aunt, somebody's church mother. As the many photos from the glamorous shindig began to hit the web, social media rejoiced at the sight of former friends Kanye and Jay-Z cordially shaking hands and posing in pictures together. Fans concluded that the two had reconciled at the event. However, the two hit makers have reportedly been on friendly terms for quite some time now. What? You mean you could be friends and not, like, fucking make a documentary about it or post it on Instagram or, like, tell everybody your business? What? There's human beings out here that's not
can
giving
you believe
us
that?
Every single thought on social media? That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. According to sources, the oldest lyricists have moved beyond their feud. Started when they didn't go to the Kardashian West wedding in 2014. From there, the two called each other out on songs, and it all came to a head with the alleged legal dispute sparked by West reportedly claiming he was owed over $3 million streaming from a title agreement. The title issue was reportedly settled out of court amongst the two. Since then, the sources allege that the two have since bumped into one another on several previous occasions this year, with all being harmonious between them. So yeah,
I'm sorry, Beyonce was a little bit more important than whatever the hell you was going through.
What do you mean?
Like, he was complaining about why he ain't calling him. Yeah, because he's trying to get his wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I just think it's cool that they made up, man. I know that, like I said, this is the shit I be talking about, man. And it's just my fault for being surrounded by this kind of personality on the internet and these kind of people. But, like, I just don't believe in this shit where it's just like, it's bad to reconcile with folks. And that, you know, because Jay-Z and Kanye don't agree on, you know, shit politically, that they not supposed to be cool with each other no more or whatever. I think that's an internet thing. I think everyone on their social media, you know, you turned off your, you know, you unfriended those people. You stopped fucking with them.
Everybody is a one and done.
Yeah. And then the people that you still do fuck with like that, you just don't talk about it no more. You know better.
Right.
You know, but you know, your aunt, your uncle, your cousin, your whoever, your brother, your friend from college or whatever that you still do keep up with, but you know that motherfucker is not on the same shit you on, you just don't talk about it. You know, those conversations happen offline away from everybody else and stuff. And
correct.
You know, and you just leave it at that. But I think, you know, the truth of the matter is, like, it's okay. Like, there's something positive about the reconciliation, not just because of that, but I really, and this is probably some hippie shit and I admit it, but I really do believe that somebody, you can affect somebody that is not on the same level as you in certain areas or on the same path as you. You can affect them positively by not just shunning them and being like, fuck you, you're worthless. Like, as long as they're not truly, you know, trying to, you know, be unrepentantly horrible or whatever, I think it's a chance for people. I think everybody, there's a chance for a lot of people to grow. There's a chance for a lot of people to be educated and stuff. And I think a lot of the stuff that people do with these, like, very public feuds is performative, and it's not for each other, it's for us as an audience. And so I don't know, I saw them dapping up each other, doesn't mean they best friends, it doesn't mean, you know, but I don't know, to me that was better than them just ice grilling each other the whole night or being really awkward just so that I could go home and laugh about it. Like, so
yeah. And the thing is, people act like being cordial is the problem. People act like, if I don't quote unquote like you, the fuck you forever, is I got to look at you crazy. But I've seen people online bang breakfast all day about certain people and fuck them, da 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 da. They meet them people in real life, they don't have that same energy. Or they meet them people in real life and then they come on the internet, then their perspective has changed.
I've been that person. I've had people talk shit about me or talk shit to me on social media, energy totally different in person,
completely different.
And I'm not one of those people that change. Like, I don't get online to tell you some shit that I won't say to your face. So right. So you know, I've never, like, I lucky for me, you know, I've never had to have that situation, knock on wood. I you know, there's people that, you know, I remember the Charles Oakley shit. Like, there's people I've made jokes about and shit, and then that's when I had my realization, like, oh, this shit is real, the internet is not fake.
No, it's not.
But in general, like, you know, there's a certain level of performance to social media and, you know, and the public and being famous and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to me, seeing them dap up, it didn't mean that I co-sign everything this nigga says or any of this. And I also just never had that expectation of these other people when Kanye was lashing out, knowing his mental health status, knowing the rhetoric he was spewing, knowing that I disagree completely with, I've checked completely out of Kanye West, period, right? Even knowing that, I still didn't go, well, I guess Pharrell will never talk to him again. I was like, no, that they're actually friends. They'll continue to fucking, like, be around each other, whether or coworkers or whatever they are, you know, industry peers, I don't know. But they'll continue to be in the same industry together, you know, the way most people do with their coworkers.
Yeah, people don't disappear.
A lot of y'all work with somebody that voted for Trump, and you don't like their ass, you ain't necessarily friends with their ass, but you be cordial at work, you know?
Yes, you do, but you let the internet tell it, you come in and smack that motherfucker in the face and kick his MAGA hat off. Yeah. Word!
Barack Obama says women would run the world better, and research shows he isn't wrong. If you look at the world and look at the problems, it's usually old people, usually old men not getting out of the way, Obama said on Monday during a private speech in Singapore about leadership. They cling to power, they are insecure, they have outdated ideas, and the energy and fresh vision and new approaches are squashed, Obama said. He added that women are not perfect, but are indisputably better than men. I'm absolutely confident that for 2 years, if every nation on the earth was run by women, you would see significant improvement across the board on just about everything, living standards and outcomes, Obama reportedly said. We do know this. There are women leaders of other countries, and not to mention when you have like local women leaders and stuff, I mean, it does fare better under women.
It really does, and studies and statistics have showed that when women have to fight to get into leadership, and then when they get into leadership, people go, oh, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Yes, because she's probably fucking overqualified for the job.
Well, when they try to get the job, they face a lot more animosity and scrutiny. Once they have the job, they ended up getting a lot better approval ratings than men in the same jobs. Whether it's corporate America, political, whatever you call it, people hate an ambitious woman, but when a woman gets there, then it's okay. And then the other part is nobody thinks they're misogynistic, nobody thinks they have any misogyny in them. So, you know, once somebody attains that status of woke, you know, they can be misogynist without being misogynist. You know, somehow you only hate the women presidential candidates, somehow you only seem to have a big problem with all the women celebrities, somehow, you know, but you're not misogynistic. Hey, I'm too woke, I'm feminist, I'm this, I'm that.
Misogynistic at all.
Andre 3000 says a new album isn't coming and explains how fame has killed his creative drive.
I can understand that. Just the way fame and the internet and the expectations, and it could be a lot. It could literally be a lot.
Yeah, he went on the Broken Record podcast and he was talking to Rick Rubin, and he said, he was unable to start a new album. He said, I'd like to, but it's just not coming. Haven't been making much music, man. He told Rubin at the 1335 mark into the podcast. My focus is not there. My confidence is not there. Benjamin goes on to elaborate on how his massive success has actually hobbled his creative drive. Once the attention is on that world, the world goes away. The release of the one-off solo songs and occasional feature hasn't helped either. Any little thing I put out, people nitpick it with a fine-tooth comb. Oh, he said that word, and that's not a great place to create from. It makes you draw back. If Benjamin does eventually return to sharing music, it may not be with a rap project. I'm trying to find out what makes me feel the best right now. What makes me feel the best is when I do these random instrumental kind of things. They make me feel the most rebellious. Yeah.
And the way one thing I love about Andre 3000 is that he's forever doing different shit. Like anything you get from him, it's not gonna be the same shit. And anything you get from him, a lot of times, a lot of niggas reject, and then they let it hit them, and then they're like, that shit is everything. Like, they got booed at an award show that they won, and it was like, the South got something to say. You know, they make fun of themselves, you know, y'all them aliens, them pimps and shit, you know, cause that's the way I would, like I say, even if he never comes out with anything again, I don't mind, but if he does, it's gonna be some out there shit, and I'm here for whatever his creative mind gives us, because he just constantly thinks outside of the box.
Yeah, it makes me think about the lyrics to 13th Floor, Growing Old, when he said, the Southern slang, Fango waves, and Mojo chicken wangs. I grew up on Booty Shake, we did not know no better things. So go ahead around and diss it while real hip hoppers listen. Started by African bell bottle, so you and your partner granted your thoughts. Like, I fuck with that line, I grew up on Booty Shake, we did not know no better things. I think people forget that Dre, Big Boy, these rappers that we idolize, that we've like fucking like consumed everything they've done,
like 20 something years, we've written
there's probably academic courses on Outkast at this point.
Yes sir.
And we've studied them as if they are like, you know, museum artworks, but at the same time they're human beings who are not static fixtures,
right?
And they, you know, these at the core of everything that they've still done, everything that Andre is seen in life now at this point. I'm sure he's been all over the world. I'm sure he's fucking, like, he's still a nigga from Southwest Atlanta, Georgia, you know, for the, he's still from the SWATs. So you still got this, like, you still have all the expectations now of what is woke for people heaped on these people who are not, who did not elect to represent or be in that.
Mm-mm.
Who, you know, and I think that pressure when he talks about the feeling rebellious by only doing instrumentals and feeling like people concentrating on which word he said and stuff like that in the rap, people have always been like amazed by his word choice and delivery and stuff. But what's happening now is like, well, you said this word and it's not, like, we don't approve of this word anymore, or you said this phrase and, you know, this isn't cool. But Andre never changed, we did,
right?
And I say that because, like, as much as people like to put, especially Andre, for some reason, I think Big, what's funny, Big Boy and Andre, like, it's a reason they work together. They just, they kind of the same, they be on the same shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because people will think like, well, you know, you got Big Boy, this drug dealing gangster rapper. I'm like, Dre on them tracks too, you know. Mm-hmm. Dre was talking about some shit himself, like, shit, listen to Jazzy Bell. Like, I remember listening to Jazzy Bell one time, I don't know, years ago, being like, oh yeah, that's right, this could not play now. Like,
mm-mm,
these niggas would be upset. And what's funny is people think they want more Andre, they think they want more Outkast, they think they want that shit. They don't really want that shit. They want to feel like they fell in 2002, or they want to feel like they fell
this nostalgia, listen right to the old shit then, my nigga.
But you not 18 or 20 or whatever no more. Like, you're not that age no more. You're not gonna appreciate it the same. You don't even have the same leeway, because you were going through a part of your life where you was ignorant and allowing certain things. Now you wouldn't allow those things. Now you want to break it down. Your adult mind, your whatever, your woke mind, it won't allow you to enjoy that shit the way you did.
No.
Even when people revisit shit, like, I'm not a big fan of, like, the revisiting through a critical lens of today thing, because it's like, music is meant to be consumed when it was consumed. It's not really meant for a time, like, they don't have time machines.
Mm-mm.
You know, sometimes you get lucky and there's a thing that someone was saying back in the day that was unpopular then, but now you listen to it and go, oh, okay, I get it. But most of the time it's not like that. It's like, this is how I felt at the time, and I'm capturing a time in my life, a small glimpse into this window of me, and that shit is not gonna necessarily translate to 40 years from now,
right?
And more importantly, I might not translate to 40 years from now. So the shit that you thought was okay for me to say back then, that you used to rap along to, yeah, you might not fuck with no more. And so I can kind of understand how you will be like, and that makes me not want to make the music. Like, why make the music for this shit, you know, for y'all to turn around and shit on it for me, for being me, for not changing, or me for being who I am, you know? Like, not everybody want to be Dave Chappelle and be out, like, I'm defiant, I don't give a fuck what y'all
right
say, I'm still gonna be sophomoric in the face of all this. Like, not everybody built for that or wants to be that. Some people just go, it's better if I just bow out of this shit, you know? Which is funny, because if he put out something and let's say it wasn't up to snuff as far as for people's political ideals and stuff now, people would tell him, well, why didn't you just stop? I wish you wouldn't have made this music. I wish you would have shut the fuck up. So he beating him to the punch and been like, I'm not gonna make the music, I'm gonna shut the fuck up. And people still mad, still disappointed, still
sad. They're gonna be mad regardless. They're going to be mad regardless. You know, it's one of the things we talked about before, how people beg and plead and I want it and get it, and it's not what they want.
The dopest shit he can do right now is show up places playing a flute and people take selfies with them.
I am there for it.
That's the dopest shit, because everybody can agree that that's beautiful and adorable and dope and magical and all this shit, and it's, oh, it's so Andre.
Mm-hmm.
But let him put out a track, it's totally different response. It's like, we expect excellence, and we also expect it to be like either so forward thinking that we ain't even on that yet, or so, you know, because we only remember the highlights, right?
Agreed.
We don't want to remember you know, talking about her period late. Guess what I did? Click. No, not me. Can't be me. Who did who? We don't want to remember hanging up on a woman that said, I'm pregnant. We want to remember him being like synthesizer, microwave me, you know, like mm-hmm. we want to, oh, he was ahead of it on like Instagram and people's getting like, you know, like, using science to like medically change their children and their bodies. And we want to remember that because it's like a high. Like, I can't believe he even was on that shit.
Right.
Yeah. And then sometimes he was on some other shit and y'all wouldn't fuck with that now.
Yeah, you know, because that's the thing. I take his music in the totality. Like, I'm like you. For that time period, I loved it because I was there and I was with it and I understood it. And it's one of those things how we talked about it before. It's funny now how, and Mr. Span said this, how every nigga turned into the nigga that complained about their uncles and aunts shitting on their music. Now y'all them niggas talking about these people's young people music ain't shit and stuff like that, because you get caught in this nostalgia and you don't want to move past that. Was the best time you had, unlimited time, you got responsibilities and shit now, so you checked out of music. And just because you checked out of music does not mean the music didn't continue to go on, and it does not mean that they're our back in our day we had ignorant shit too. All music ain't ignorant. Just because you might not understand it, just because they're not speaking to you, does not mean that it's not good.
Yeah. All right, I do want to go back a second. We got a question in the chat room from my man Walter, who talks about, we was talking about Obama saying women could probably govern better as leader of countries, and he says, should Obama have bowed out against Hillary in 2016 when Obama was running, or 2008, I mean, when he was running? And you know what, the answer to this is unpopular, but yeah, probably should have. Now, I know what you're saying, but Obama was a good president, right? You love Obama. I do. I think he was a good president. I think he's probably the best president we've had, at least top four, right? Here's the thing. Hillary Clinton, as a white woman, would have probably leaned more liberal than Obama would. Like, you know, I think a lot of people get caught up on the fact that, you know, well, you know, they go, well, Obama didn't push things to the left enough. Well, we know why he didn't, because he's a black man. And we know that that was a big ass albatross around his whole presidency, was like, whatever I do is setting precedent, not just for me, but for all black people. And the things that they're saying I am is gonna eventually come to roost for every black person after me. It's gonna be the reason that they rebel and revolt in this country. Now, it turns out they did the shit anyway. But the point being, that's how he had to govern. I think a person like Hillary Clinton, a little bit more, you know, studied, a little bit more, kind of privileged in that arena, a little bit more, what do you call it? She was just a little bit more established. That's what it is. She was more established at the time. I think she does the unpopular shit. She twists the arms. She threatens the Democrats that don't get along, the blue dogs. She goes, well, we're gonna get your seat to, we'll either get it to another Democrat or let it go to a Republican. We don't give a fuck. Next time you run, you won't get shit. I think she would have twisted arms and done the things that Obama wouldn't have. I think she wouldn't have believed in this idea of a coalition that could be built among Republicans and Democrats. I think she had been fighting the opposition of that for at that point 20 years. So I think she would have been like, nah, fuck them, they're actually not gonna come around, they don't like me already, they have every conspiracy against me, I've seen the worst they can do, and I don't believe in their goodness, I don't believe I can appeal to anything on them. And so if you really want to be honest about it, I know you know, maybe you was trying to be slick or whatever, but the truth is, we probably do get a better country under Hillary rather than Obama, only because she would not give a fuck in the ways that he gave a fuck, and the ways that he kind of had to give a fuck. Even with her being the first woman president, she would have been the 45th white president, she would have been fine, or whatever it right. is, the 44th white president, she would have been fine being like, well, don't like me, you already don't like me, and I won, so this is a mandate, I'm gonna fucking kick all y'all asses, y'all gonna do what I tell you to. That's my guess. Now, we don't know, you know, obviously this is just hypothetical, but I think she would have been even more liberal in 20, like, people called her a centrist and shit, but they weren't looking at her policies, they were just calling her that from really running off of what Bill Clinton did in 96 and shit, but and what she ran as in 2008, but 2016 she was more liberal than fucking Obama was.
Yes.
You know, like it is what it is, man. It is what it is. All right, let's go to the next one. State's attorney Kim Fox with two X's kicks off an effort to expunge tens of thousands of minor marijuana convictions.
Good.
Cook County State's attorney Kim Fox on Wednesday kicked off the first wave in a mass effort to automatically clear tens of thousands of low-level marijuana convictions from court records on the eve of the legalization of recreational cannabis in Illinois.
Would you say automatically, which means they don't have to, I don't have to spend money to go downtown and pay, I don't have to pay no fines to erase it, I don't have to pay no fines to expunge it. You mean automatically? Mm-hmm. Which the way the shit should be. Thereby, we reverse it, but you're gonna have to spend some money. Fuck you. Reverse it means reverse it. Do your job.
She personally presented the county's chief judge with the first of about 1,000 petitions filed Wednesday during a special hearing at Layton Criminal Court building. One by one, Chief Judge Timothy Evans granted the request by Fox to expunge these those convictions from public court records, handing the paperwork to Circuit County Clerk Dorothy Brown to stamp. The rare joint appearance of major county leaders in the 26th and California courtroom, it was well choreographed as high-level prosecutors, activists, and even Governor J.B. Pritzker, who signed the legislation legalizing recreational weed, looked on. Honestly, it was prosecutors who pushed for and implemented these convictions. Fox, who is facing a potentially tough re-election fight after a year that saw her buffeted by criticism of her handling of the prosecution of former Empire actor Jussie Smollett, she said in court, "We must now own our role in the harm these convictions have caused and play our part in reversing them." Yeah, it's funny because the part that she caught the flag for with the Jussie shit was being like, "We dropping the charges. Stop pursuing this man."
Yeah, because we, you know, not that he didn't do it, but y'all not presenting enough for me. I don't feel like I'm going to win this case.
And what would be the public good of him going to jail? This seems very spiteful and shit. Fox personally presented the judge with the first of 100 petitions of the 1,012 that were filed Wednesday when addressed reporters at the news conference alongside Pritzker. Fox recalled how her mother was a regular marijuana user to relieve symptoms of bipolar disorder. While her mom was never criminally charged with a marijuana offense, she said the experience gave her perspective on those who were. "These are people shouldering the responsibilities of families. I grew up around it. I knew my mother was never a criminal." As part of the mass effort to expunge the minor marijuana conviction, prosecutors identified which cases were eligible and filed paperwork without the involvement of the defendants themselves. They will be notified by mail in the near future that their convictions have been cleared from the record. Yeah, you're right. I love that. Because we've seen other things where, like, we're willing to expunge these sodomy charges and stuff for gay people that we had these charges on the books, and we realize now that, hey, gay sex should not be illegal. Now all you need to do is come on down here,
right? You require me to do the work,
file a petition, write a letter. And I like this better. Like, no, you've been cleared, you're good. You'll get a letter in the mail saying you're good to go.
And TPS brought up a good point. It is, you actually spend less paperwork by just doing one swoop like this than to, because if individual people come, you got to pay for the manpower, the paperwork. Just do it. It's actually cheap for you to push a button, control alt delete, and go on about your business.
Yeah. Now I guess you know, she should never try to run for president or get too big for her britches here, this black woman, because she has been a state's attorney now, and we know that there's no such thing as a good prosecutor, guys. We all know this. Can't possibly ever run for office. No such thing as a progressive prosecutor. We're gonna bring up the people that she did send to jail for whatever crimes, right? I'm sure in 2024 or whenever she decides, you know, 2028, 2032, we'll be like, isn't that the bitch that tried to lock up R. Kelly? I don't think so. So y'all cool with her locking up a black man?
I sure am.
All skin folk ain't can folk. You gotta go through that on whatever version of Twitter.
It is in 2032 from Russia. Yeah, we'll be 65 somewhere around in that year. My
comrades, I'm telling you, those Vidanias, we should not vote for her. Yeah, interesting. How long is the sermon? A study ranks Christian churches. How long should a sermon be?
I can tell you the reality of how long it is. Yeah.
Well, they did the research. Man.
Okay.
The major branches of Christianity in the U.S. have sharply different traditions.
No shit.
With sermons at historically black Protestant churches lasting on average nearly four times as long as Roman Catholic sermons.
Mm-hmm. A smooth hour, they be in and out. We start at 11, we out of this bitch by 12.
If you already knew this, let me get an amen.
Come on.
Billed as the first of its kind, it's research.
Ain't nobody gonna be like, Pastor, take your time. You not gonna hear that. They gonna, mm-mm.
At where?
At black church. Pastor, at white church, you ain't gonna hear no, Pastor, take your time. Mm-mm. Oh. They straight to the point. Read the hymn book, the choir, tithes and offering. All right. Let's go. All right. All right. Okay. Got your word. All right. Y'all leave. It's time to go. Have a good day.
Yeah. That's among the findings of an analysis by the Pew Research Center. Billed is the first of its kind. 49,719 sermons delivered in April and May that were shared online by 6,431 churches. Pew described its research as the most exhaustive attempt to date and catalog and analyze American religious sermons. According to Pew, the median length of the sermons was 37 minutes. Catholic sermons were the shortest at a medium of just 14 minutes, compared with 25 minutes for sermons in mainline Protestant congregations and 39 minutes in evangelical Protestant congregations. Historically black Protestant churches had by far the longest sermons at a median of 54 minutes. Do you understand what I just said? Not that was the longest, the median.
Oh, I'm about to say 2 hours.
No, the median is 54. That's the that's like the number that's the closest to the middle or whatever, right? The fuck.
Some short but most longer. Yes,
that means somewhere out there there's like sermons is probably like two times longer than that or something.
Mm-hmm.
Pew said sermons at the black churches lasted longer than mainline Protestant sermons, even though on average they had roughly the same number of words. Oh, we know why.
Yeah, we know why. Choir, music.
No, not just that. That's not just that. Even if it had the same number of words in the speech, black pastors take longer to say that shit.
Yeah, they do.
Even like,
I got a hmm and a yeah. Yes,
right?
Come on now.
They gotta repeat it. You know, they gotta repeat the line.
Oh, I wonder the neighbor. Yes, sir.
Yay, though I walk through the valley. Ha! Y'all don't hear me though.
Come on,
dude. Yay!
Yes. I said,
yay, though I walk through the valley.
Praise.
You see, he didn't just crawl through the valley.
Yes,
he didn't moonwalk through the valley.
You better preach, preacher.
He didn't fly through the valley.
He didn't fly.
He walked. The organ hitting.
Yes,
down. I said walk down.
I said walk. Boom 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 boom. Yeah, you got the same amount of words because you got a 15-minute dance break.
Black people go to a church. If that nigga ain't sweating, it's like, oh, he didn't even want this.
He didn't work hard enough.
He didn't want these ties today.
He didn't work hard enough.
Mm-hmm. He must think it's his day off. I'm gonna go ahead and give you 5% this week. You was only giving me 5% of what you was supposed to be doing. Mm-mm.
And you get the real good. The preacher get the stepping up there while they preaching.
Mm-hmm. Pew said sermons at black churches lasted more than mainline Protestant service, even though on average they have roughly the same number of words. A possible explanation, Pew said, was that preachers at black churches allow more time during their sermons for musical interludes, responses from worshipers in the pews, and dramatic pauses in their oratory.
Not dramatic!
Dramatic.
Yes! You know your preacher stop and just look at everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't y'all know who I'm talking about.
It ain't dramatic pauses like a telenovela or something.
No.
It's not dun dun dun. It's dramatic, like, and I'm about to get quiet and look at you and make you feel that you. I know you masturbated this morning, okay? I want you to carry that evil in your soul when you think about if you're gonna give me $5 or $10 out your pocket today, because your filthy hands, semen covered hands, deserve 10. Give me 10.
Come on, they don't get all up in your business. I don't care if your skirt is to the ground. A hoe is a hoe. You know you've been out there hoeing.
Looking, coming here smelling like sex still.
Come on.
I seen some of y'all out last night. Mm-hmm. You're going up on a Tuesday, well, now it's Sunday.
Come on!
I'm like, well, how you know that song if you only listen to religious
be,
music?
Be knowing all the stuff to be
how
popping.
How you know that song? Hmm. Explain that. See, these, Jesus walked on water, but he took off his sandals because these is covered in the bloody shoes.
Come on!
And if it see you in the street, that's how you know he don't bump with you.
Come on.
I'm like, how do you know? You
jump, jump. I want to see you jump, jump for Jesus.
This nigga is doing Cardi B's. This is a Cardi B song. How does he know this shit? Anyway.
I hear y'all talking about that money. You need to give that money to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Numerous prominent pastors have pondered the question of sermon's length. I've asked and been asked that question 100 times, said Reverend Herschel York, the professor of Christian preaching at the at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. So he wrote in 2016, today, after 35 years in ministry, I have a definitive answer. You can preach as long as you hold their attention. Yeah, you know, I want to see what his classes look like. Is he the one teaching these techniques?
I don't know.
Now, see, yeah. That was a good speech, but you didn't even repeat everything 7 times. Now, I know we said that the minimum length was 15 minutes, and you gave a 16-minute speech, and that does qualify, but yeah, I'm going to be honest. I was expecting a 75-minute speech. I actually wanted you to take up the 4 hour of class we had today with just your sermon, and then to make us stay longer and have me say take your time. We ain't going nowhere, but yeah. I'm gonna give you an A because you met the requirements, but you gotta go preach at a Catholic church. There's no way I can send you down to AME Zion.
They looking at you, they're going, you was concerned about the kids, y'all got kids church? Nah, you can't be over here with the black folks. Don't believe in children's church. Oh, y'all in there all together, kids be bored at their minds.
Kids gotta go to another whole room and learn about whole world in his hands.
Come on, I was one of them kids, you get so used to the noise, you just go to sleep. They'll be like, how can you go to sleep? You, after a while, you just zone it out and you just go to sleep.
You know, the worst part of it was the child abuse of your parents acting like your ass wasn't in there all day. They swore it wasn't no time. I'm like, nigga, if you had to work this long, you'd be mad. What are you talking about? We've been in church 8 hours, you acting like we ain't just pull a shift. Well, I don't know what you acting tired for. Nigga, the sun is down. I can't even play no more.
We was at sunrise service, we was at 8 o'clock service, we was at 11 o'clock service.
That's how I became an atheist. Black church, y'all. That's how it happened. I was young when I stopped believing.
We was at the missionary's anniversary.
I'm just like, why Jesus can't make a miracle and make this shit take less time?
I gotta be out here Sunday school too, come on.
Like, I'm looking at Bible study. Looking at the sun go down through them fucking painted glass windows, being like, so I guess it's just not gonna be no basketball in my future, huh? This is prime. I bet Lindsay's outside of his goal just shooting around. And I'm in here in some tight ass corduroy pants or some shit, some tight ass hot pants with some AC not working, swinging this MLK fan
with your shoes got you sliding everywhere,
praying to Satan. Just
oh no,
just to end it all, just end this church today. That's what happens, man. That's how you start.
That's how they get you.
I said, as soon as I get old enough, never coming back, and I was right. The question came up in the 2018 episode of Ask Pastor John, a Q&A forum hosted by Reverend John Piper. No relation to never mind, guys. Those who know the joke will get it. Chancellor of Bethlehem College and Seminary in Minneapolis, he said he generally needs to lay at least 50. I'm sorry. Oh, I made myself laugh at a joke I didn't even make. My heathens know. But yeah, he says he generally needs at least 40 minutes, sometimes more than 50, to deeply explore his things. It's no different than this podcast. If I look around the nation, there are many hundreds, maybe thousands of growing churches where pastors preach rich, Christ-exalting, God-centered, Bible-saturated, textually rooted, intellectually challenging, emotionally moving, life-altering sermons for 50 or more minutes. And very few people get frustrated that they are too long, Piper said. Missouri-based researcher writer Chris Colvin, who helps pastors with sermon preparation, notes that Jesus' Sermon on the Mount contains some of the most powerful messages in the scripture, and it can be read aloud in less than 15 minutes. He must be a white. In addition to It's about efficiency. We don't want to waste their time. People have things to do. That's the other thing about white church, though. Like, it might not be hitting, but man, you get home, you can watch the whole Panthers game.
Mm-hmm. And they used to tear Olive Garden up. They be lining up before open up at 11.
You can go to brunch. Popeyes on the way home and get there and everything be fine.
Go to the Panthers games.
Mm-hmm. So
that's why some of them churches downtown, that's what they do. They probably leave church and go to the Panthers games.
Yeah, them white churches, boy, they did not play. And they be trying to get that next, that next one in there.
Mm-hmm. That's why, like, who is it? It's Calvary. One of them churches, they have like 4 or 5 services, but them shits be like back to back. They be pushing them shits like at concerts. All right. Yeah. Did y'all leave? Give them the 30 minute gap. Next show.
And the thing, see, the move that I used to do was, well, I'll just go to the early morning service because then they have the 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock service after that. So they gotta let us out before they let them in.
Yeah.
You would fucking think, wouldn't you? Yeah. Until they don't. And then your ass is sitting up there like, now how the fuck am I gonna get out the parking lot when 500 people trying to park and I'm just now pulling out? People been traveling around this parking lot in circles for 75 minutes. Cause pastor got hit with the spirit today. Now I'm
stuck. Have everybody mad. Have the people going, shaking on the door because they're going to pull on the door and the usher going to be like, you can't come in yet.
I thought I was like, you ever get that for the 11 o'clock service and see this nigga still going? You like, well, damn. I know our shit going to be late.
Right. Like, we could have stayed at home.
We ain't even getting started till fucking 11:30. So I know we ain't getting out of this bitch till 6 o'clock.
Kids mad. Mama, you rushed me for nothing.
Yeah, sermons from evangelical churches were 3 times more likely than those of others to include the phrase eternal hell. Mm-hmm. It found the word hallelujah appeared in sermons from about 22% of the historically black Protestant churches, and those congregations were 8 times more likely than others to hear that word.
Yeah, you're going to hear hallelujah.
Come on now.
You're going to hear praise the Lord.
Yep.
You're going to hear God's good all the time, God's good.
My favorite, though, is that old black man that just live over by the side. I never could find him, but
his voice come out of nowhere, don't it?
But they always live over by the side, and they know the perfect time in the pause of the sermon to be like, "Wow, I don't know how they know it." I think you just get old and black, and you just know. Like as a young black, I could never even come.
You couldn't
close.
Get the cadence right.
I would be cutting the pastor off and shit. Everybody be turning around staring at me like, nigga, what are you doing? But it's always an old black man at every black church that know how to hit that well right when the pastor hit one of them pregnant pauses where he's like, and some of y'all need to be ashamed of yourselves. Wow. I'm like, damn, how you know? How did he know?
Pastor tossed it up and he dunked it.
I've never been in a church where somebody fucked it up. Not once.
He'd be like, good assist.
I've never been in there where he's like, hey, you know, sometimes, wow, what? Who was that? Calm down, damn boy, let me finish my sentence.
And you know what, and the same thing with the tambourine shaker. Whoever shakes the tambourine always know how to shake the tambourine on time.
Do they practice that?
I don't know. Like, but you hear running.
Yeah, do they have to be there at the practice sermons and be like, okay, so then this is, I don't know. I mean, like, some stuff I get, the organ people probably, you know, they know, you know what I'm saying?
But the thing about the tambourine person, that's actually a gift, because if you ever seen somebody that's really, really, really good at that, you'd be like, well, god damn.
Pugh said the sermons examined came.
Somebody said tambourine school. I think so too.
Pugh said the sermons it examined came from 2,156 evangelical congregations, 1,367 mainline Protestant congregations, 422 Catholic parishes, and 278 historical black Protestant congregations. While other congregations could not be reliably classified, the research did not analyze sermons delivered in synagogues, mosques, or other non-Christian congregations. So wait, am I reading this right, dude? I just want to understand. Does this mean they didn't even ask the Baptist churches?
If it was Christian.
Because they said Protestant. And then they said mainline Protestant congregations, Catholic parishes, historically black Protestant congregations, while other congregations could not be reliably classified, The research did not analyze.
I don't know if it's because they didn't put their videos online, because a lot of this is.
I just wonder if they're saying Baptist was not classified, or is Baptist part of Protestant, or if they just didn't ask Baptist.
Because you know, a lot of them kind of conjunction all up underneath each other, so I don't know who's connected to who. So I have a feeling some of these categories might be subcategories of these other pieces. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I don't know the answer either. I'm asking. I don't know. I didn't expect you to know. I don't know. But it just made me wonder.
Somebody said Baptists are Protestants.
Okay, because I didn't know the way it's, you know, I didn't know the way it was done. So, okay, so they did use Baptists. Okay. Because I was going to say, them stats sounded very Baptist. I've never been to, at least not a church that said Protestant. All my churches said Baptist, AME, Zion, something like that. So, yeah. There you guys go. Now we know.
Now you know.
You know, we didn't know before that black churches go longer, and
I could have told you
thank
that.
Thank God we have.
I'm glad you got signs, because, you know, I could have gave you my own thesis.
Yeah. Thank God we had that, got to the bottom of that one.
The whole bottom of it.
We were so confused. All right, let's get into some other things. What do I feel like doing? Kind of don't feel like fucking with black people.
That's fine.
I guess we can do some white people news, maybe. Wait, this video is 8 minutes long. Jesus Christ.
About what is it about?
It's a cover. Hold on, I want to find a different one. Do I even have any left? See, Love is a Battlefield. All right, we'll try this. Love is a Battlefield. Is that a white people song?
I think so.
Is a black person cover?
I've heard that song before.
All right, I heard the name before.
They said yes, it is.
Okay, all right. Well, black person covered "Love Is the Battlefield." Mayasia is her name. Mayasia is her name, and let's see if we can get it to play. Wait, is it gonna play an ad first? Matter of fact, you know what? I do want to play an ad. First, I forgot today's episode is actually sponsored.
We don't play.
Damn, woo, your boy almost fucked up. Today's episode is sponsored by Adam and Eve, y'all. Let me see if I can play some music for you guys. All right, today's episode is brought to you by Adam and Eve. That's right. Do you like free stuff? I like free stuff. I think free stuff. It's real cool. It's one of my favorite things about Christmas. But free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better. Select any one item for 50% off at adamandeve.com, and then you'll get a bunch of free stuff. I've recently used it to get some stuff for our bedroom, guys. I spiced it up on their ass. All right. enter offer code TVGWT at checkout, and you get 10 free tantalizing gifts. A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy, and plus 6 free spicy movies. And I guess they've updated it since the last time I used it, because the free movies are now digital.
Oh shit.
So if you know, I know a lot of people, y'all watch stuff on your laptops, your smart TVs, all that stuff. Well, now you can watch it that way. Plus, they give you free shipping. That's TBGWT, offer code TBGWT. When you check out at adamandeve.com, go in there and get you something nice. Some nipple clips, some
blindfolds.
A blindfold. Okay, take it to the next level. You know what I'm saying? Tie somebody up. Get you some handcuffs.
Yes, handcuffs.
I don't know what you into. I'm not judging. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they got a bunch of quality stuff. And
shout out to
S&M. Mm-hmm. Shout out to S&M. Okay. SNL, because Eddie Murphy's gonna be on that Saturday. But anyway, all right, y'all, thank you so much for this. Let's get into the white people news. Okay, I know that's what y'all really came for. AdamandEve.com, code TBGWT. Now white people news. Oh, and I'm not showing it on screen because it's not a video. It's just okay. A regular. Hey, yeah. You're begging me to go and making me stay. Why do you hurt me so bad? It would help me to know wow, she really made that sexy as fuck, because if I'm not mistaken, that's like a kind of rock song, right?
I thought so.
Pat Benatar, right?
Don't remember.
Yeah, it's more 80s rock. Like
two different songs.
We are young.
Black version better.
Slow it down. Both of us knowing
love is a battle. Yeah, nobody fucking to that one I just played. You can have sex to this.
When I'm losing control, will you turn me away? Touch me deep inside, and when all this gets old, will it still feel the same?
And Pat Benatar was doing that like 80s talk sing that wasn't singing,
right?
Like it was spoken word over a beat. It's not really singing
at a fast beat.
When we get old, will we feel this way? Nah, nigga, you're not singing. I did not pay this money for you to stand here and do this. Get up there and earn your money like a black preacher doing a 55 minute sermon.
Come on, 50, whole 55.
So that's the white people news intro. Let's get into that's y'all's man. Gotta talk about all the stuff y'all's president is doing as white people's president. Let's see, what did his ass do lately? Oh good, I only saved three things. I've been saving less and less shit, as y'all can tell. Donald Trump deputy campaign chairman Rick Gates gets 45 days in weekend jail for lying to the FBI. Man, for a guy who's on the up and up and not afraid of any investigation into impeachment, he sure does seem to have a lot of people going to jail for lying around him.
Everybody around him done went to jail just about.
I read today Paul Manafort had like a cardiac attack or something, had to go to the hospital.
Stress, because there must be on the list somewhere.
Them lies of stress.
They was like, you go to jail, everybody go to jail.
He sent a 6-page letter to Nancy Pelosi on the eve of impeachment vote. I'm writing you a 6-page letter and I signed it with some piss. I'm not reading it. Trump says Trump says Armenia massacres were not genocide, directly contradicting Congress. And watch the Republicans turn around. Well, yeah, it's not genocide anymore. Why? Well, he said it, and I can't be on his dick unless I fucking agree with everything he says, whether it makes sense or not. So there you go. All right, now let's get to some delightful news.
Let's do it.
Oh, what are the whites going into today? Let's see here, guys. This is a very white story. This is one of my faves. I'll try to bring up the screen. Karen, I know you like to see the pictures of the whites.
I do.
Does it have all the pictures? No, it just has a video. Okay, let me open up the other page. But a commissioner's wife pours a drink over a reporter's head after questions over misuse of funds. That's right. You start asking where the money going, doing your job as a reporter.
I show you these drinks upside your head,
bitch. How dare you
ask about some motherfucking money?
How about this? How about a Coke and a smile? Cause that's what's going on with your whole wardrobe. That'll show you.
You damn journalists doing your job.
I blame they president. He the one said the media was the enemy.
Yes, sir.
This is the shocking moment. A county commissioner's wife poured a drink over her head after she questioned whether they used local funds to go on their honeymoon.
Oh shit.
Dog, not the honeymoon with the taxpayer money. You wasn't on these broke bitches on your honeymoon with they gonna be money. Like,
why we ain't getting no garbage this week? Why the mail not running?
I smoked the garbage. Video from news blog All on Georgia shows Chattooga County Commissioner Jason Winters jaw drop as his spouse Abby Winters, 35, dumps the beverage over the head of reporter Cassie Bryant, 39. You hate to see such white on white violence.
Come on.
Oh my God, the commissioner says as a conference table ahead of a public county budget meeting on Friday, nodding his head and pointing at the action, he adds, every bit of this has been brought, as he stands up and walks away from the table where he left newspaper coverage. They were discussing during the meeting. A woman believed to be Winters is heard saying, I'm sick of it. So that must be the wife. Jason Winters is the, okay, yeah, so that's his wife. So the pictures on the left, let's see, reporter Cassie Bryant has pressed charges against a Georgia county. So this is the reporter. Mm-hmm. Here with this like glamour shot photo. Mm-hmm. And then the picture of her covered in punch. I don't know what this is.
So it was a man who pulled it on a woman.
It was the man's wife.
Oh, who pulled it on a woman?
She poured it on a woman reporter.
You goddamn right, or press charges against your bitch.
Yeah, here's the video of it. I don't know if this is a news report of it or the actual video of the incident. But below this you can see the picture of him and his wife. So on the left is his wife Abby. Mm-hmm. She look like she'll pour a drink on a woman, don't she?
Mm-hmm. And demand a manager.
Think she won't fucking report you to the main office. And then that's him.
She knows somebody in corporate
on the right.
Yeah, you better go cuss him out and pour a drink on him, because you pour a drink on me, yes, I'm pressing all of the charges.
Right? Oh, so it's just a raw video of the
they probably have to record
meeting.
This.
Okay. Nothing seems to be happening. When does the fucking drink get poured? I don't know, this is like a long video for no drink porn.
It must be closer to the end.
What was his wife doing in the meeting?
Right, what was she even doing in there? She ain't running up for nobody's office.
So a white lady with the cane look like she look unbothered. I don't know, man. This is a long video for no. There's not a lot of payoff on this porn.
It's probably at the closer near the end.
Yeah, well, I could barely get it to play. It was moving so slow, so I'll just read the rest, I guess.
Okay.
She brought it on herself. A voice outside of the camera frame says, as another replies, by saying he went to France. And the woman responds, oh yes, bitch. Another attendee is heard responding, oh classy. Responding police said they found Bryant outside in her car with a dark liquid over her hair and jacket after she immediately walked away from the meeting in shock. Four witnesses present at the meeting.
That is the whitest shit ever. They was like, meet me in court, bitch.
First of all, you mess up a black woman's hair, you fighting. Like, I don't know who told you this, but that was our fighting ends.
Yes. Yeah, it's gonna be charges.
Yeah.
One of us gonna get a black eye, dog.
Four witnesses present at the meeting offered police statements alleging Mrs. Winters said at least twice that Brian deserved it. Two of the witnesses were from local news outlets, including radio stations I don't give a fuck about. The radio station reported that Mrs. Winters was sitting next to her husband at a conference table when the people began to arrive for the meeting. Mrs. Winters got up from her seat to the other side of the room. WZQZ News was at the meeting and observed Mrs. Winters pour the soft drink on Miss Bryant. The radio station reported, after pouring on Miss Bryant, Mrs. Winters says, you deserve that, bitch. Miss Bryant did not respond, but began gathering her belongings to leave the meeting. As Miss Bryant was leaving, Mrs. Winters was escorted to a private office by Public Works Director Joe Reed. As she was walking back to the office, Mrs. Winters said, she deserved that.
Yeah, they caught you on tape. Like, the whole incident is caught on tape, dog. Yes,
they also always have to, it's so funny how they have to, like, say it to themselves. Cause it's not like the whole room didn't cheer for her. So then she had to be like, she deserved it. Trust me. You guys know. Don't believe me. I said it. A police report stated that none of the witnesses heard the victim say anything that might have antagonized Mrs. Winters. However, a friend of Bryant's said the altercation may have stemmed from an earlier post on the reporter's Facebook page where she was asked to investigate Jason Winters' possible misuse of funds. The most classless acts I've ever witnessed in my whole life, and I've been to a lot of places. Chattooga High School teacher Paula Arden told Channel 9 News about what she saw at the meeting, adding that she defended her friend Bryant. I looked just in time to see her dumping on Casey's head, and Casey just sat there. We all were shocked. Mrs. Winters told police in a statement that she tripped and stumbled calling the drink to accidentally spill.
Mm-mm.
But then said the bitch deserved, call her bitch multiple times and said she deserved it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, the caucasity. The caucasity of this white woman. Mm-mm. Mrs. Winters told police
in a statement. Get the whole 24 hours, they're going to put you in jail.
Police state that when three officers responded to the scene after a 911 call, wait, they called 911 on this.
You know she did.
It feel like it should be the non-emergency line or whatever that is, but okay. 911 was called. The commissioner and his wife had refused to speak to them without consulting a lawyer first, but later made the statement at the lawyer's office. Bryant later, you gotta get a lawyer.
Yeah, because they knew it was gonna be a lawsuit.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, you could have not done this. It caused, like, now you gotta spend some more of my tax dollars paying your lawyer.
More of my tax dollars. Y'all already went to France on my money.
Damn. Bryant later confirmed the witnesses' accounts to the Somerville Police Department and claimed she heard someone say the drink looks good on her. Mrs. Winters is now charged with disorderly conduct and simple battery. She turned herself in and was pictured smiling in her booking mugshot. She has since been released from jail after posting a bail amount of $1,520. What happened at the budget meeting today was completely inappropriate. I'm disappointed to see not only the behavior of those involved, but the excuses made for the behavior after the fact. All on Georgia said in a statement. The media plays an integral role in ensuring transparency, and these types of antics are dangerous to open government and a disservice to the people it serves. Locals call for the commission to resign or be fired after the incident. I guess commissioner. I honestly don't see any outcome that doesn't include Jason resigning from office. One person commented on the video shared by All on Georgia. Jordan Butler commented, Jason needs to be removed from office immediately. He is a joke. His budget is a joke. It has been for years. When are you people going to wake up and get this left-wing snowflake out of office? He has done nothing for this county except watch the elderly and fixed-income citizens suffer due to high tax rates and garbage fees. Unless you credit him for purchase of a theater and Paradise Gardens just for a little revenue from liberal fairies. What? Who are you even mad at? Are you mad at the media?
They mad at the Democrats.
Jesus.
A Republican wrote this.
I don't know what he wants. And you know he condones this repulsive act his wife has done. In 2014, Winters was banned from the Democratic Party for posting campaign signs to State Senator Jeff Mullis, a Republican from Walker County, and for posting signs for Republican Governor Nathan Deal. So he's a Democrat in name only.
No.
So he posts campaign signs for Republicans. They said basically you can't run as a Democrat because you're essentially a Republican running as a Democrat. And then this other person left a comment like, with this left-wing snowflake, what? That dude think everything left-wing that don't go his way.
Everything.
This goddamn left-wing traffic light turning red, so I can't make this right, because I only make rights when I drive town. That's how fucking Republican I am. If I can't get them making nothing but rights, I don't fucking go.
Goddamn left-leaning deer crossing the road.
I'll make three rights before I make a goddamn left in this county. It take me 50 extra minutes to get anywhere.
Right.
But I'm making extra rights. I'll ride the way down the street as long as I make a right to get home, okay? But yeah, apparently he was criticized for saying the county was doing better that they had in the past 10 years, and then admitting that he may have to cut jobs.
What?
Everything's looking great. Oh man, that's the Trump formula right there. Getting big returns. By the way, I just cut the jobs and government shut down. So
mm-hmm. And they'll still blame a way to be mad at the others.
Yeah, and they said although more money's coming to the county, more is being spent than being brought in.
Of course.
That old chestnut.
Well, going to France on your honeymoons? Yes.
Oh man, white people, wow, boy, pouring drinks. I don't fight. I don't argue. I just hit that bitch with a bottle.
Come on. I hit that bitch with a bottle.
Adam Driver walks out of an NPR Fresh Air interview over Marriage Story clip.
Oh, what happened?
He was promoting his new movie, Marriage Story. And of course, he's in The Report, which I just watched. Mm-hmm. And he's in the upcoming Star Wars film. So he's promoting all this stuff. He's getting interviewed by my dog Terry Gross on Fresh Air.
She's been around forever.
If I could just be famous enough to get interviewed by Terry Gross.
Oh, she's the best.
After expressing displeasure at the idea of listening to a clip of himself singing Being Alive from the musical Company, Driver's character sings the song late in Noah Baumbach's new Netflix film Marriage Story. And she's like, okay, I'm gonna play this clip. Now, he was recording remotely with her, and I guess they thought, we know you don't like to hear yourself sing or see yourself act, because that's a thing of his. He just doesn't like to see it, right? And so they said, well, we thought you would maybe take off the headphones and we could play the clip and then just keep going,
right?
Now I guess they didn't realize how serious this was, because essentially he excused himself and never came back. That was the end of the interview.
Well, goddamn.
And they could not play the interview on the show because he walked out.
Wow.
Yeah, and they interviewed him in 2015, and he did say during that he doesn't like that. And she asked him why, because she said, would you like, can you listen to this audio clip? He said, I don't want to hear the bad acting that probably was happening during that clip. And he made that joke, and she said, why does it throw you off to hear yourself? He says, yeah, no, I've watched myself or listened to myself before, then I always hate it, and then I wish I could change it, but you can't. And I think I have like a tendency to try to make things better or drive myself and other people around me crazy with things I wanted to change or I wish I could change.
Let's get in his own mind.
Yeah, and in a New Yorker profile in October 2019, interlocutor Michael Schulman described Driver's reluctance to watch himself as a phobia. The actor himself recalled feeling nauseous during the premiere of Star Wars The Force Awakens and hiding out in the green room during the screening of Black Klansman. So yeah, it does sound like it's some type of phobia.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good actor.
Me too.
And that, it's the same that he goes through that. So, but who knew? Kylo Ren can't watch himself in movies and shit.
Right?
Fucking lose it or whatever. And I saw people were, the people around me were kind of, empathetic to it. I'm sure he's catching hell on the rest of the internet or whatever. I don't
yeah, a lot of people are like that. Even when we're recording podcasts, people go, I just can't hear myself, and I completely, but I guess I don't have that problem as far as hearing myself
peak.
But it is something that you have to get used to. It's very different hearing yourself, don't get me wrong, and listen to your own voice and play back to you.
Yeah, I definitely had to learn to love it too and learn to get used to it, because I know with me, having a higher pitched voice, as a man, I'm supposed to have a deep voice, talk like Logan.
You got this woman out here with a deeper voice than you.
Right, and so it's always been a
who
thing
got
that,
the pants in the relationship, who got the holes in the relationship,
right, who's on top. So I always had to
must be her.
So I always had to get over that, because it's like masculinity is attached to the deepness of your voice. Meanwhile, one of my favorite rappers is Q-Tip, so to me it's just it's your voice is your voice, you can do about
yes,
it
sir.
But it was just interesting to have to know that I do an audio thing for a living. Everyone's gonna hear my voice, and there's always people that go, you don't sound like you look and all this shit. I think I'm supposed to like look like Ray J or something. Colin Firth and his wife of 22 years split almost 2 years after an affair and stalking scandal.
Oh.
Yeah. They maintain a close friendship and remain united in their love for their children. Colin Firth and his wife, Livia Firth, have split. People can confirm. Colin and Livia Firth have separated. They maintain a close friendship and remain united in their love for their children. They kindly ask for privacy. There will be no further comment. The announcement comes at almost 2 years after the actor, 59, and Livia revealed that she had a relationship with another man while the two were briefly separated. The pair were most recently photographed together in September while attending the Green Carpet Fashion Awards during the Milan Fashion Week. They share a son, Luca, 18, and Matteo, 16.
Nicky's is grown. Well, one of them almost grown, but one of them grown.
So if you're trying to slide up on some Colin Firth DMs, you ain't got to deal with one of them babies for 2 years. They're going to be out the house.
Out the house.
In March 2018, the pair revealed that Livia had a relationship with an Italian journalist while she and Colin were briefly separated between 2015 and 2016. Oh, the old Carmelo Anthony. He's married. I'm not. In the Italian court case, Livia, who married the Oscar winner in 1997, claimed journalist Marco Brancaccia, 55, was stalking her after their 11-month relationship ended in 2016. He has denied the accusations. A few years ago, Colin and Livia privately made the decision to separate. The first said in a statement early in March, during the time Livia briefly became involved with former friend Brancaccia, the first have since reunited. If she go back to that man, that'll be the scandal of the year. The 2017 police opened an investigation.
Colin Firth and his wife Jesus. Revealed that she had an affair.
Why did
with
that
a man?
Only start playing now? Anyway, in 2017, police opened up an investigation against Brancaccia after Livia filed a report in Italy accusing him of launching a frightening campaign of harassment, which he denied. The reality is that Livia and I have known each other since we were youths, and then in 2015, 2016, we had an 11-month affair. After it ended in June 2016, I never called her again. I did send her two WhatsApp messages, one happy birthday text message, and an email to Colin, the latter which I truly regret. Yeah, that's what happened. He sent that letter to Colin. You know that shit was probably some... That was probably some shit. You know she ain't satisfied. Okay. I was beating them guts up. You know you can't handle this shit like me.
He younger too, ain't he?
Let her come back to a true pimp, okay? You know the rules of the game, nigga. Chose me.
Oh, no.
Now, we can settle this like some gentlemen, or we can get into some gangster shit. Brancaccia was officially charged with stalking May after authorities found abusive messages and emails on Brancaccia's phone during the investigation. So, this nigga was lying. I wasn't stalking. Let me look at your phone. Huh? For what? Now, see, that was the one thing I wasn't prepared for y'all to do, officer.
Mm-mm. I wasn't prepared for you to look.
The case was settled out of court July 2018. They had a private settlement. First, Olivia married in 1997 at the first meeting in the 1996 on the set 1996 on the set of the BBC drama Nostromo. The two later moved to the Italian region of Umbria and welcomed two sons. Firth has since become an Italian citizen. Oh, Colin. It's sad to see it happen to a good man, but, you know, there's plenty of fish in the sea, and I know the women loved him from Colin Firth.
Mm-hmm.
He was in our movie. What's the one with Eggsy?
Mm-hmm.
Kingsman?
Yeah, Kingsman.
He was in Kingsman.
Yes, he acted the hell out in that movie, too.
Thousands of penis fish wash onto a California beach.
Penis fish?
Well, moo moo buckaroo. It is a dick buffet out here. Is thousands of pulsing penis fish have washed ashore on a California beach as seen in the jarring photos that are raising eyebrows due to the creature's phallic shape.
I never knew this existed.
The quirky marine life is officially called a fat innkeeper worms. What? And an expert writes for Bay Nature that he believes a recent storm in Drake's Beach area. Of course, Drake sending dicks to the beach. Arrested in the area is the reason so many of them mysteriously appeared on the beach. Spotted by Ivan Parr, December 6th, the biologist from the Western section of the Wildlife Society explains that the 10-inch fat innkeeper worm typically lives underwater, burrowing in mud or sand, but the storm likely carried them ashore. I've heard my share of imaginative theories from beachcombers such as Flotsam or of a wrecked bratwurst freighter.
Yeah, I know that got to scare the fuck out of you. You're out there, doo-doo-doo, what the fuck? What? Where's all these penises come from?
Right? It's like the Jack the Ripper, the penis man, like, show
I know.
Up.
I'd be like, where all these dildos come from and why are they pulsating?
Yeah, unless it's Monice from Love Hip Hop Hollywood. She would have been out there like, ooh, dicks, trying to get this money. However, Parr explains that a sausage ship accident is not the cause of the scene. We're seeing the risk of building a home out of sand. Strong storms, especially during El Nino years, are perfectly capable of laying siege to the intertidal zone, breaking apart the sediments and leaving their content stranded on shore. The spoon worm, which can live for up to 25 years, feeds and swims using a spatula-shaped proboscis. It typically eats bacteria, plankton, and other small particles, which it collects using sticky mucus nets.
Oh, then it's sticky. Oh.
Mucus. So just it uses cum, and then it just shoots them out and it sucks it back up. Parr says he's heard of sightings over the years in California and Pandora Dunes, Moss Landing, Bodega Bay, and Princeton Harbor. The creature bakes back 300 million years and can also be eaten.
No, thank you.
You wouldn't eat no dick fish, Karen. You supposed to be so adventurous. I try anything. But if somebody puts some dick fish on your plate, you won't eat it.
No.
Get the, what? You will suck a dick, but you won't eat a dick fish.
No, I will not eat a dick fish. No.
Wow.
Yes, I will suck a dick, but no, I won't. I don't eat a dick. I suck it. I lick on it and suck it.
How does that make sense?
I don't bite it.
Oh my God. What, you think you'll get confused?
No.
Next time I'm sucking a dick, I'm just going to go to town. Couldn't help myself.
Are you gonna eat it?
I put some salt and pepper. Yes, I'm not homophobic. Of course I eat the fucking dick. It's a fucking fish.
How am I homophobic and I'm the one to suck the dicks?
Will you eat a hot dog?
Yes.
What? What? Oh my God. Get that. Oh my God. That didn't even make sense.
I didn't say I was logical.
Wow. Wow.
Unless somebody fried up and said it tastes like chicken.
An anonymous colleague at the, he had to be anonymous. God damn. Wow, what is wrong with us? It's not an actual dick, people.
I wonder how they gonna season it up.
So what if you just chop it up and put it in like some rice? It don't look like a dick no more.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. The post was dined on a stir-fried fat innkeeper worm before in Shanghai, China, describes the taste as being like a liver strong band made it with a clam. What is a liver strong?
I have no
idea. A live strong band made it with a, so like those bands that like, what's the dude with one ball? Lance Armstrong used to wear, didn't he have those live strong bracelets?
Oh yeah, the ones that stretch.
So I guess he's saying it's like a rubbery clam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow.
I bet you season up, it probably is good.
I can't believe you really would pretend that you wouldn't eat that shit. That's the biggest lie.
That's the biggest lie.
You miss I love edamame over here. Wouldn't try some dick fish. Okay. Okay. All
right. Now you flop it in front of me like that. I mean, goddamn, at least season it up and present it right.
Well, it's not like you got to deep throat the shit raw. It's going to they're obviously going to cook it.
I know.
Well, what other fish you eat raw? They're going to cook it. They probably cut it up into some sushi. It fit right in.
Okay, that's fine.
Wrap some rice around that shit. Oh, my God. My goodness.
That's fine. Would you like some dick ramen? You know.
It's not like they're going to call it a dick fish when they give it to you. Would you like
call some, it one of them fancy names?
We can make a restaurant that only sell the dick fish. We can call it, would you like some dick with that?
A side of dick.
We can hire ex-strippers as our waiters, our wait staff. No shirts.
Appetizers called pre-cum.
Walking around all greased up.
Yes.
Ma'am, can I offer you some dick? What else did I want to talk about? I know we're getting to the end.
Yeah, appetizers called foreplay.
Sure, Karen. Now you're on board. I appreciate
I'm aboard with the joke.
I appreciate you being a team player here.
I am.
That was nice of you.
Thank you.
You know what? That's it. Let's just do some sore ratchets. Nana Karen. Karen left me out here on Dickfish Island by myself, y'all. I'm the only one willing to eat a dick over here. I eat a dickfish. Mm-mm-mm.
You chop it up right, yes.
The one who's never had a dick in his mouth is the one that'll eat. Eat the dick. That's sad, really, when you think about it.
Say the one who never licked the ball, huh? Say I don't lick balls or nothing, but I'm the one that's gonna eat the dick. Mm-mm-mm.
What if the dick fish is just really just a mean person, and that's all, that's why they call it the dick fish, not because it's shaped that way, it's just an asshole. Oh god, here come those dick fish, sorry, he's putting their feet up on the subway. It's fucking dick fish, man. This motherfucker, I always want to play devil's advocate. I always want to play devil's advocate every time we bring something up. Oh, dick fish. Sword and axe wielding home invaders send Bowmanville man to the hospital. Police are investigating after a Bowmanville man was injured when he confronted home invaders who were wielding a sword and an axe. Durham police responded to the Jackman Road and Scugog Street area for a home invasion at roughly 1:30 a.m. Officer said the victim told them he confronted two home invaders, one armed with an axe, the other with a sword. The victim suffered serious but not life-threatening injuries, and the suspects fled on foot. He was transported to a Toronto area hospital. Police are investigating whether it was a targeted attack. The suspects are both described as white men, guess the race. One had a mask covering his face and the other wore a dark hooded sweatshirt and blue shoes. So, oh, and you know, I have one more thing I did want to say. I don't know how much time we have, but someone had hit us up on Twitter to say that, you know, I can see why people would call Karen the co-host. Not call Karen the co-host, because she doesn't introduce the segments or the topics. And I listen to a lot of podcasts where one person introduces the topics and then they both discuss. And the, you know,
even what, with three and four people, I've
what's
seen
the tea?
Mm-hmm.
Tea with Queen and Jay. Mm-hmm. Normally, you know, one of them discuss, like, you know, will bring up the topic and stuff. Doesn't mean that they don't introduce segments together, but you know, Firestarter Tone is kind of, you know, that's like a common, that's Andy on Three Guys On. It's a pretty common thing, actually. And she was saying, you know, it has nothing to do with sexism, but I think you have to examine that further, examine yourself further, because I do think it's misogyny, because
yes, it is.
It's only leveled at women like that. Reggie from What's the Tea has never been accused of being anything less than Nick Jew's co-host.
Right.
Never. He doesn't introduce topics normally. She normally brings the segments and stuff like that and kind of runs the thing, but you know, his opinion is valid. You don't have to run it to do it, you know. Keith and the girl,
right?
You know, the much of what we do is directly correlated from them, direct line from them. Like him to have made a reference to us is like almost like a spinoff show, and I look at that as a badge of honor, matter of pride. Like, yeah, I'll definitely take that. We definitely were inspired by them.
Mm-hmm.
But normally Keith introduces the segments, unless him decides that day, like, no, I want to talk about things, and you do that sometimes too. I do think it's only because you're a woman that somebody would say something like that.
Agreed. Because it's meant to be insulting.
And the final thing I'll say is this, whether it's insulting or not, I'm not going to accuse the person of trying to insult you, but whether this person was insulting or not, I just think you should examine whether or not it's really misogyny, because here's the final thing I'll add. I've been doing a sports show with Justin for at least 4 or 5 years now.
Yes.
The sports show has the exact same format as this show.
It does.
Except it's sports. And Justin is my co-host. Not one time ever has he been accused of agreeing with me out of some level of like, he has to agree with you because you the man. Not once. Not once has he ever been called less than a co-host, and not once has he introduced a segment. I'll rest my case. Anyway, until next time, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah. Mwah.